Chapter 2. First day on the set, Stephen Stelfox strides down the corridor leading from the dressing rooms to Studio 4. A phalanx of assistants, producers, and makeup artists forming a Praetorian guard around and behind him. Darcy D'Angelo and Herb Stutz bring up the rear with their own, smaller entourages. First day on the set, but much good material from those regional auditions already in the can, America's Freaks already edited together, concisely shamed. Nerves high, as they always are among the production crew when Stelfox is on deck, but nothing like as high as they would be from next week onwards, when the show started going out live, when the contestants have been chosen, but, of course, the contestants have already been chosen. Narrative, Stelfox is always thinking. What, who, will help to build a compelling narrative, one that can be sustained until Christmas, when it's time to drop the bomb?
Yep, on our way, a girl is saying into a headset.
Naomi, darling, Stelfox saying, handing his half-drunk bottle of Evian to her, make sure that fat fucking retard working camera 3 knows that if he shoots me from low down on the left-hand profile again, he's going to be filming inserts on a Mexican soap opera for the next 20 years.
He knows, SS.
The studio doors swinging open, Stelfox rearranging his features into a pleasant, benevolent smile, and it was time for the general to meet the troops. It works like this. The opening show would be composed largely of footage from the regional auditions, basically a continent-sized net containing much of the American population that should, by rights, have been scratching with their toes at the soft walls of padded cells. The 50-year-old faggot, capering in a leotard and yowling Madonna songs. The twitchy, nervy child molester, mumbling an Eagles number. The 300-pound yodeling housewives. Then, gradually, they would focus on specific characters from three groups. 1. The few with actual talent and looks who were definitely going through. 2. Those with talent counterpointed with weight problems, boss eyes, wardrobe-sized buck teeth, and fluorescent acne. The ones who might be going through if their backstories were deemed to hold enough heartbreak and drama. Dialysis machines and poverty, broken homes and orphanages, missing parents and lost childhoods. And that might only functioned for the audience who watched the show. The cunts, to use the industry term employed by Stelfox. The production team had, of course, long since decided who was going through. Then there was 3, the smaller, more rarefied group that Jesus belonged to, those who were attractive and talented and clearly completely off their fucking tits. In the big dressing room, more of a holding area, really, Jesus can hear the laughter coming from the studio audience as the audition tapes are played back for them. He absent-mindedly plucks a few notes on his unplugged Gibson and looks around the room. There are maybe 20 of them herded in here, all of them nervous, pacing, trilling out scales, warm-up exercises, all of them dressed in their best clothes, all of them eyeing one another cagily, some blatantly hatefully. All bar Jesus, of course, whose beatific grin and tattered jeans and sneakers are topped off with the fresh but faded Mogwai t-shirt he borrowed that morning from Becky, who had been the only one of them with the sense to do some laundry at the hotel. A big black kid squeezes past Jesus and lodges himself in the corner, sweating, trembling. It looks like he's trying to position himself close to the sink, like maybe he's going to throw up. He's huge, maybe 250.
Hey, you okay? Jesus asks. The kid shakes his head. Man, I can't wait for this to be done.
How come you're doing it? Jesus asks, not unkindly.
Want to help my family? The kid shrugs.
What's your name?
Gary.
Jesus. They shake. JC's hand, cool and dry. Gary's like a vibrating dish rag.
Like in the Bible?
Like in the Bible.
Look, don't worry, kid. What's the worst can happen? They don't like me. So fuck them. I like you.
A young woman with headset and clipboard bursts in.
Jesus, she says. Jesus Christ?
That's me.
As he stands, swinging the guitar around behind his back, there is a ripple of laughter that usually greets his full name being said publicly.
You're up next.
From the side of the stage, Jesus watches the previous singer being questioned by the panel of judges.
I've known since I was a little girl, she's saying, cameras creeping all around her, that I was going to be famous.
I've always felt different to other people.
Yes, love.
Stelfox is interrupting.
I'm sure you are different.
The problem is you're not talented. Boos and catcalls from the audience as the girl's lip starts to tremble.
Come on, Stephen, Darcy says. We've heard a lot worse than Carrie right here in this room.
Oh, so that's a reason to put her through, Darcy. We've heard worse, I mean.
Laughter mingling with the boos.
I'm just saying there's no need to.
Yes, and I'm just saying, next! Thank you, Carrie.
You're making a big mistake, Carrie says defiantly. Oh, I'll live with it, Stelfox says. Next!
Jesus comes out, blinking in the chrome spotlight, and as scripted, Herb Stutz asks him,
What's your name, son?
Jesus Christ.
Laughter as Stelfox does a scripted double take. Jesus smiles. 31 years of this. Fucking dad.
Sorry?
Stelfox says. Jesus. Christ. Darcy puts her hands over her face to stifle a giggle. The audience laugh harder.
Well, not much to live up to, is there?
Stelfox says.
Where you from, son?
Stutz asks him.
New York City.
Off you go, then, Stelfox says, before adding, Jesus.
The audience laughing again, still laughing as Jesus goes into his agreed number, the same song he did at his audition, the only living boy in New York, just him and his electric guitar.
The laughter dies down pretty quick. Stutz and D'Angelo are enraptured, the former grudgingly, the latter unreservedly. Stelfox unreadable. There are spontaneous whoops and cheers as he takes a short, fluid solo in the middle. As the last chord rings out, the audience bursts into sustained, genuine applause.
Oh my God, Darcy says, that was so amazing.
How long you been playing that guitar, son? Herb Stutz asks.
Since I can remember.
You can play, kid, let me tell you. And I've worked with some of the best guitar players in the business.
He looks along the desk to Stelfox, who is writing something down, and asks,
Stephen?
Right,
Stelfox says, looking up now, like he hasn't been paying attention.
Unlike my colleagues here, I'm not wedding myself because you can play the bloody guitar. I could throw a stick down Hollywood Boulevard right now and hit 10 people who can play the guitar like that. Playing an instrument doesn't necessarily make you a star. And that's what this show is about, finding a star.
And look at you. He stops, expecting some resistance at this point. But no. Jesus is standing there, just nodding, looking a little distracted. Dead air. Nervous laughter from the audience.
Sorry, Stelfox says, am I boring you, Jesus?
More laughter at the name, already becoming a running gag.
Kind of,
Jesus laughs, completely relaxed. The audience gasps and laughs harder.
I'm boring you, Stelfox says.
Well, this is a first.
Let's see if this bores you.
Yes, you can play the guitar. Well done. Yes, you can carry a tune. And yes, you're a good-looking guy. But I don't sense any star quality from you. And I think your choice of material is lame in the extreme.
Simon and Garfunkel?
Please. So obvious. Yeah, you know, I thought about maybe doing a little Hendrix, but the guy said,
Jimi Hendrix?
Stelfox says,
please, Buskerville.
That's enough of that. Jesus says, quietly but firmly.
Excuse me? Stelfox says.
You heard me, big guy. Don't you be dissing Jimmy now.
Whoops and cheers from the audience, for they have never seen this before in the previous two seasons. People do stand up to Stelfox, but usually in a jaw-trembling, fist-balled, you're-wrong-about-me kind of way. Occasionally in a shouty, bitchy way, but never like this. Calm, collected. The audience are not the only ones sensing something different.
Stelfox leans across the desk, eyeing Jesus.
Some people might think I know a little something about finding talent, he says. And for me, it's a pass.
Guys?
You're kidding, right? Herb Stutz says. This has to be one of the most talented kids we've seen here.
Kids, Stelfox says.
Sorry, what age are you, Jesus? I think you're... He scrabbles at his notes.
31.
Hardly a kid, then.
Who cares? Stutz says. I'm sold.
Darcy, looks like you have the casting vote here.
D'Angelo, who has been listening to this exchange while watching Jesus with a little smile on her face, looks from Stelfox to Stutz and shakes her head.
I just love it when the boys argue. Jesus, you're working for me, baby. I say you're in.
A huge cheer and applause going up. Applause before the red applause signs have even lit up. From Jesus, no punching the air, no yes, no leaping or crying. Just another barely perceptible nod.
Deary me, Stelfox says, shaking his head. Well, which one of you is going to mentor the good Lord here?
Stutz and D'Angelo look at each other, and she leans in, whispering something in his ear, him nodding.
Honestly, Stephen, Darcy says, the kind of music I think this boy's going to be doing, I think Herb's the best fit.
Herb, Stelfox says, your funeral.
Man, Herb says, I'm going to love proving you wrong on this one.
Okay, Stelfox says, Herb's going to mentor you. See you next week.
Right, Jesus says uncertainly, nodding, cradling his Gibson. As the audience continues to whoop and cheer and whistle, Jesus makes his way along the judges' table, shaking hands with each of them in turn. He comes to Stelfox last. The two men shake, Stelfox's grip cold, sub-zero, inhuman, and lock eyes for just a second. Stelfox looking into irises blue as cornflowers floating on the Pacific. Jesus, in his turn, looking into eyes as dark as space, a fathomless pit of nothingness, bats circling in the black wells of the pupils, falling down towards the vacuum of the soul. Jesus shudders. Stelfox feels something unusual, too. The general arc of the debate about having Jesus on the show had, of course, been scripted. But something had not. Something Stephen Stelfox is struggling to place as Jesus walks off, and he runs a thumb under the collar of his black cashmere V-neck, feeling the release of some heat, feeling something he hasn't felt in a while. Not since he'd been creator and ruler of the number one rated television show in America. The realization was simultaneously exhilarating and unsettling. He felt the presence of an adversary.
And what the fuck is mentoring? Jesus finally remembers to ask Becky later that day as they sit sipping daiquiris by the pool.
You never watch the tapes, Becky says. Jesus shrugs helplessly.
I tried. It's so fucking horrible, man.
Who's your mentor?
The big fat white guy? I have to meet him tomorrow.
Herb Stutz?
Ugh,
Darcy's nicer. Anyway, they, like, help you pick songs and work out arrangements and stuff.
Why would I want some old douchebag picking songs for me?
It's what happens on the show.
Yeah, well, the show can kiss my ass.
Try and play nice, sweetie, Becky says, standing up, looking good in her bikini, already getting a nice, even tan out here.
It's just, why does it all have to be so competitive? Jesus says, sadly.
Becky looks down at him. You're so sweet, she says, kissing him on the forehead. She hovers there, close to his face, their eyelashes almost touching. He can feel her breath. If he stuck his tongue out, it would touch her lips.
Jesus reaches up and strokes her cheek. Look, Becky, I'm not really in a commitment kind of place right now.
Ha, she says, getting up, slapping him lightly.
As if. Get over yourself, Mr. TV star.
He watches her swish off towards the pool, then a splash as Becky makes a neat dive into the deep end. Later, they all gather in the bungalow to watch the opening episode. Beers, candy, and popcorn piled high on the coffee table. Even Gus and Dottie stretched out front and center. Miles and Danny are excited, pumped up.
You're going to be on TV!
Like none of it's been real for them until tonight. Everyone watches as American pop star sets out its stall. The 12 acts who have made the final cut, one of whom would be eliminated each week until only two remain for the finale in December. Among the lowlights, as Morgan says, there is Ryan Crane, a chiseled white kid in white vest, also mentored by Herb Stutz. There is Harmonix, a hard-dancing boy band composed of what appear to be four Ryan Cranes of slightly varying ethnic origin who perform hip-hop-tinged pop. There is Ladies' Night, an all-girl trio who wear tiny costumes of fishnet and hot pants while they belt out raunchy R&B. There is Gary McDonald, the big, sweet black kid Jesus met at the taping, his huge voice thundering out of his huge frame.
Filling out the freak quota,
Morgan whispers to Chris. Then there is Jennifer Benz, the tiny Playboy centerfold mentored by Stelfox himself, an all-American sweetheart possessed of a cut-glass voice with which she wrings every ounce of nuance out of a seemingly endless power ballad. And then, suddenly, last of all, there is Jesus, huge on the plasma screen, eyes closed, blonde hair falling over his face as he sings in front of the judges. They all scream and clap as Jesus groans and pulls his sweater up over his head. Pete gasps and flattens a hand dramatically on his chest.
The camera loves, loves, loves you, he says.
Yeah, looking good, man, Chris says.
Then footage switches to Jesus's audition interview.
Why do I want to be on the show?
Well, when I say I'm the son of God, laughter dubbed over this from the studio audience, I know how that sounds.
Uh-oh, Morgan says.
But unfortunately, it's true. More laughter. You know, I came back here to try and help people, to try and inspire you guys to, you know, be nice. You all seem to have forgotten about that, which God, you know, God isn't too happy about. I think, he goes on saying more, and then it cuts to a commercial.
Well, you set your stall out, Pete says. Do you think the guitar was a little out of tune?
JC asks Chris.
You had to go and say all that, huh?
Morgan says. You know what you are now, don't you?
Morgs, Becky says.
You're the mental case who thinks he's the son of God.
Shut the fuck up, Morgs, Chris says.
It's okay, guys, Jesus says.
So? You were the one who said he didn't want to go on this because it was just a freak show. You just became the biggest fucking freak on it. You're comedy relief.
We were talking for a while. I didn't know they'd use that bit.
You know, Morgan says, getting up, for the son of fucking God, you ain't that smart sometimes.
He walks through to the other room.
Shit, Jesus says. What's his problem? He doesn't want people laughing at you, Becky says.
Oh, who cares, Jesus says. It's only a TV show. Anyway, look, I got my per diem from the studio today. Kids, you want to go get some ice cream? About a half hour later, standing in line at a Baskin-Robbins on Melrose with Big Bob, Miles, and Danny, Jesus found out who cared. Cars slowed, people shouting out nice things. Hey, Jesus, you rock! And mean things. Hey, save me, you fucking freak! Be nice! Passers-by gasped and gawped. There were three autograph hunters, two photo requests, and one threat of violence that terminated when the angry Christian realized Bob was part of the entourage. Shit, Jesus says as they wait for a cab back to the hotel, Miles and Danny deep into their chocolate cones. People really do watch this shit, don't they?
Frag,
Bob says plaintively. Stephen Stelfox turns from the window of his living room, thinking, tapping the snub black remote control against his teeth. Behind him, through the softly tinted glass that takes up the entire wall of the room, a stretch of Malibu sand, his personal stretch of Malibu sand, sparkles golden in the sun, and beyond it, the Pacific Ocean. Steven Spielberg is his closest neighbor, a half mile along the beach. He presses play and watches the interview again. The good-looking, though decidedly stoned, blonde guy talking to an off-camera Samantha Janssen. I don't expect anyone to believe me, really, he's saying. I've just been getting on with things and trying to help people in my own small way. Me and my buddies, Chris and Morgan. People seem to think Dad, God, is like this vengeful, wrathful guy who's going to destroy them if they don't, like, totally worship him. And that's so wrong. I mean, he's definitely got a short fuse, but... Selfox hits pause, Jesus' face filling the 60-inch plasma screen. Handsome motherfucker for sure. Good voice, too. Though Stelfox could really do without him scratching away at that electric fucking guitar. But here was the thing. He seemed to completely believe what he was saying. So clearly he was utterly fucking mental. Could definitely be good for the freak quota for adding viewers for a few weeks. The ideal contestant, Stelfox had come to believe, would probably be an attractive but crazed maniacal freak with the ultimate hard luck story, who actually had some talent. But it never worked out that way. They were usually nuts for a reason. The hard luck story was usually well-earned. He walks through to his kitchen. It takes some time, this walk, and he passes modern art on the walls. A Warhol, a Damien Hirst, a Banksy. Just a low-life vandal, the last one, if you asked Stephen. And a fucking lefty to boot. But the prices were going up, and his dealer assured him it was a good thing. In the kitchen, a seemingly endless expanse of Italian marble and vintage reclaimed wood that had, according to the decorator, a triple-bent, simpering San Fran fag, but the guy who was doing everyone's place right now, come from a 19th-century Quaker church somewhere in Massachusetts or some fucking place. It takes him a good minute to find one of the fridges, houseboy's day off, where he takes out a bottle of ice-cold Grey Goose, the vodka thick and viscous, right on the point of freezing as he pours it over ice and adds a strip of lime rind, which the maid has already pre-sliced. The good life. Here it was, then. The result of many years of, well, not sweat and tears. Blood, certainly. Knives plunged in backs and fronts. False rumors propagated and stoked. Misinformation and dissembling and cover versions and making sure you could hear all the fucking words. Well on his way now towards being a billionaire, he sips his drink and looks at the glittering sea, at the Pacific. Everyone is going to pay, he'd once said to himself, meaning it too. And now everyone was paying. The fucking world was paying. In ballots. He'd bump into some of the clowns from the old days now and then, when he was over in London, at the Groucho, at Mark Hicks or Nobu. Derek, clinging on by his fingernails to the managing directorship of some filthy piece-of-shit indie back-catalog label, sweating about his 15 pence marketing spend on some reissued Stiff Little Fingers live album. Dunn, still just a plunger at what, 50? Hanging in there somehow at EMI, still laughing at some cunt of a radio DJ's jokes as he tries to sell him on playing some disgraceful pop record. And here was the thing. No one bought records anymore anyway. Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic? Fuck that. These cunts were trying to sell champagne at Belsen, truffles at Auschwitz. No one cared. No one had any fucking money, and besides, they could get it all for free with the click of a mouse. How well he remembered those downloading conversations around the turn of the century. People are always going to want the whole album. You want the artwork and the packaging. Yeah, right, mate. Then you wake up 5 years later to find yourself starring in some horrible version of the fucking Matrix. A plug in the back of your dome, and the machines are all talking to each other all round the world, giving each other all your hard work for free. For fuck all. You suggested paying for music to anyone under 17, and they looked at you like you were fucking nuts. Quite right, too, Stelfox reflects. The market did what it did. Don't come crying about it. All those clowns still running around trying to sell 10,000 albums forgot a powerful fundamental. Free is a pretty big fucking incentive. So, no cunt bought records anymore. Except for his. It was too, too good. Sipping, shuddering, he hits play, and Jesus' face begins talking again. This time, from a slightly smaller plasma screen suspended above the marble island in the middle of the kitchen, still answering the question, who do you want to be on the show? The reason I came back down here, well, got sent back down, to tell you the truth, it wasn't exactly a comfortable ride the last time round, was to try and, you know, lead, inspire, help people. But that's pretty hard to do these days, and yeah, Stelfox is thinking, this could definitely work. On a couple of levels, this could work. He wouldn't want this indie freak, he is now disdainfully eyeing Jesus' folk implosion t-shirt, doing anything mental like actually winning the fucking show, of course. But he could definitely fulfill a role. Stelfox already knows who he wants to win this season. However, the show needed certain narrative strands, arcs, in order to work properly. Triumph over adversity, comic relief, crap like that. It was constructed as carefully, plotted as finely as a Hollywood blockbuster. The public, the cunts, to use the technical term, sat out there and wondered how they pulled the rabbits out of the hat. All those A&R guys he used to work with, still, like the great man said, throwing darts at a fucking board. Stelfox doesn't throw darts at a board anymore. He bets on sure things. Freeze frame on Jesus' face, looking right at the camera for a moment. Those eyes. Stelfox finds he cannot hold that gaze too long, even in two-dimensional form. Something about it bothers him. Goodness. That was it. The cunt was riddled with goodness.